Welcome to High Cheese. It's Friday, April 26, 2024. And the chickens are coming home to roost for the left. For years and years and years, we've had Marxists infiltrate our college campuses. The professors, the administrators, they've been flying below the radar screen for a number of years. And instead of teaching our kids how to think, how to critically think, like most Americans do, they've been indoctrinating our children with Marxist ideology, Marxist indoctrination. It's not about America. It's not about free markets. It's not about free speech. It's not about the truth. It's all about the oppressed versus the oppressor. That's all they teach in schools today. And in the process, they're dumbing down our kids and they're creating vigilantes. I just read a report that said that IQs are dropping among our younger people. But that's how the Marxists work. Now, what we see in Colombia, and it's just a shame, just a great institution has been diminished into nothing. So we have a merger of the progressives, the far left, with these Islamicists. Part of Bolshevik Marxism overthrow is they create where they get all these different groups together with their own set of agenda. And they get together and they may not even agree on everything, but they get together and they cause social upheaval. And in the chaos, they anticipate that they'll get their way, that the communists and the Bolsheviks will take over out of the chaos. And that's what they're trying today. And the teachers and the administrators on these on this campus, they're on board with it because we've let this happen over the years. You take a look at these big donors that have given to these schools, extremely wealthy people. Didn't it ever occur to them? Well, you're getting my money. I'm going to see what you're teaching these kids. But in a way, I blame these donors because in their minds, it doesn't matter. Whatever they teach the kids, it won't hurt me. I'm immune to anything that happens. Well, guess what? It's not the way it works. You got Jewish students being attacked on campus. You got Jewish students being threatened. You've got one Jewish professor in Colombia. He tried to get into campus and he swiped his card and it wouldn't let him in. And then some egghead administrator comes out, and this is all in video. Say, it's for your own protection. Meanwhile, they have these radical anti-Semites walking around campus, taking the campus over. And they couldn't have told that professor, hey, we're going to lock you out because we think it's for your own safety. Yeah, it's not for their own safety. They just didn't want a college professor who was against the students protesting on campus. They want to suppress another voice, and that's how they work. And this is what is lacking in colleges today. There's no debate. It's all about the bullying, creating chaos. But this is what they want. This is what we've let run our institutions. Communists, Marxists, and the radical left. And now there's a report in the New York Post that George Soros is funding these students. Now, quite frankly, I don't think I should be surprised, or we should be surprised about that. Now you hear that some donors, big time donors, you hear about the gentleman Kraft, owner of the New England Patriots, he's not going to donate to Columbia. Bill Ackman, a big hedge fund guy, he's not going to donate anymore. Well, what have you been doing over the years with your money? No questions about how the students are being taught, what they're being taught. Here, take my money. Doesn't matter what is being taught because it's not going to affect me. Well, yes, it is. And we're seeing that today. Kraft, who is Jewish, I think Ackman's Jewish. They're now seeing Jews attacked on college campuses today. And this has got to change. Now, one thing that they have to do is they've got to cut all funding for these colleges. And I don't see why the government funds any of these colleges with billion-dollar endowments. They don't need the money. Cut any funding off. They shouldn't have it in the first place. But we've got to purge the Marxists from these universities. We've got to purge the Marxists from these administrations. Because this is going to continue. It's going to continue through the summer. I've heard that they canceled graduation ceremonies in some universities. And this is going to continue. I think I mentioned a couple of other podcasts that they're going to take this right to the Democrat convention. They may take it to the Republican convention. But this has to stop. And right now, I think the only person that can stop this is the Trump administration. And by the way, what are these donors going to do with the money? They're not going to give it to Columbia. What are they going to do with it? Are they going to give it to other universities? How about Liberty University? How about conservative universities? Put your money there. These are the universities that are going to protect you in the future. Because right now, it's not coming from the Ivy Leagues. It's not coming from these big universities. But it's got to change. And it will change. It's going to take time. But it will change. So we shall see. So opening statements on Donald Trump's hush money trial began this week. And from what I hear, it didn't go too well for the government. And I've heard reports that said that one of the jurors or two of the jurors have already said they have reservations. They're possibly rethinking whether they want to go on with this because apparently the opening statement by the government was so weak. A couple of jurors are saying, oh, I don't know if I can go on with this. Looks like the case is so weak. How can I face my Upper West Side and Upper East Side friends that are staunch Democrats? What's going to happen to me if I acquit Donald Trump? So with that said, let me go to a clip. It's with Chris Wallace. Now, I didn't know Chris Wallace has a CNN show. I didn't know where he was. So apparently he has a CNN show, and he's talking to a couple of talking heads. One is Jonah Goldberg, who's somewhat of a Republican. I think he's a never-Trumper. But even Goldberg is saying this case is just weak. So let's go to this clip, and then we'll come back and discuss.
The New York case is based on the argument that Trump falsified business records to cover up a crime. He claimed he was paying fixer Michael Cohen normal legal expenses when it was allegedly a violation of election laws, hush money to Stormy Daniels during the campaign. Jonah, is this prosecution legitimate, especially raising it from a misdemeanor to a felony?
I think it's pretty sketchy, but I don't think anybody but other than Donald Trump would ever have this case brought against them.
And even these so-called legal experts on the left are saying these are new types of legal theory that they're using. So apparently what they're claiming is that Stormy Daniels claims she had an affair with Donald Trump, and Trump's former attorney, Cohen, paid her, I think, $150,000, $175,000, and got reimbursed by Trump through legal fees. So Cohen paid Stormy Daniels and then falsified bills for Trump to pay. Now, Trump claims he didn't know anything about it. And normal procedure is that a guy that has such a large company that, like Donald Trump, they don't scrutinize bills. They have bookkeepers, finance people that pay those bills. And most of the time, the bills are paid not with Trump's personal signature, but just a stamp that they use of Donald Trump's signature. So that's quite believable. He never knew that these were reimbursements. But even if it was, it's not illegal to do so. Now, this happens a lot with extremely wealthy, high-profile people. There are women out there that will claim that they had an affair with a person. You know, whether it's true or not, you know, a lot of people just pay this money. It's going away. Go away money. It's not worth the headache. Whether it's true or not, just go away. I don't want to hear it. But it's not illegal to pay this go away money. And like I said before, I'm not even sure that Donald Trump even knew that Michael Cohen was paying this money to Stormy Daniels. And what Bragg is doing, he's trying to say, well, It should have been illegal. And this is after the federal government looked at it and said, there's nothing to see here. Not only that, is that Alan Bragg, who bought the case against him, initially didn't want to do it. Even though he's no brain surgeon, he looked at it and said, this is not a winner. But he was forced into doing it by the Washington Democrats in the White House. Bragg's predecessor, Cyrus Vance Jr., refused to pursue this case. It was a zombie case. And what happened, one of the highest-ranking attorneys in the Department of Justice under the Biden administration, he started working for Alan Bragg's office to resurrect this case, to go against Donald Trump. And I'll talk about this later in the podcast, but here's the goals of the Dem. All the Dems want to do is have election interference, because every day that Trump is in the courtroom, he can't campaign. And secondly, they're looking for that headline. Alan Bragg thinks, and the White House thinks, that if they can pack the jury with Trump haters, they'll get some kind of conviction. It will get overturned on appeal, but all they want is the headline that says Trump convicted, and they think that'll help them politically. And this is confirmed. I want to go to a clip, and it's some podcaster. I think it's a liberal podcaster. Her name's irrelevant. They're coming quiet. They're coming out and saying, well, this is why we're doing it. So let's go to this clip and then we'll come back and discuss.
Can I just jump in just very briefly, though, and just say, I don't think that that's true. This is the whole thing that everyone always says about Trump. We're never going to learn anything new about him. We already know all the terrible things that he's done. What is this case actually going to do? Having him sit in a courtroom, even though this is not going to be televised, which I think was a mistake, but even so, it's going to get an enormous amount of scrutiny. He is going to be sitting in this courtroom when he should be campaigning. And that is what people are going to be hearing instead of his ideas for the country.
And this judge that's presiding over this case shouldn't be there. He's ethically compromised. His daughter is making millions for fundraising for the Democrats. And I think he also contributed to the Biden campaign. And he's put Donald Trump under a gag order. He can't talk about the case. He can't talk about the attacks on him. Meanwhile, you have Michael Cohen out there on every liberal station attacking Donald Trump. And this is being exposed. I want to go to a recently released, I think it was released last night or early this morning, from the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Jim Jordan. And they came out with a 300-page report about the corruption that's going on with this case in New York City against Donald Trump. And let me read a little bit from it. I didn't read the whole thing, but let me read a bit from it. And the title of the report is An Anatomy of a Political Prosecution. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office's Vendetta Against President Donald J. Trump. And let me read a little bit from the executive summary. The New York District Attorney has weaponized the criminal justice system, scouring every aspect of President Trump's personal life and business affairs going back decades in the hopes of finding some legal basis, however far-fetched, novel, or convoluted, to bring charges against him. When one legal theory would not pan out, instead of discontinuing its politically motivated investigation, the New York District Attorney simply pivoted to a new theory, constantly searching for a crime, any crime, to prosecute Donald Trump. Now, he goes on to talk about an attorney that worked pro bono to get Trump. And when Bragg said, look, there's nothing here, we can't prosecute Donald Trump, this one attorney, his last name is Pomerantz, resigned and wrote a book on how Trump should have been charged for this case. And Bragg eventually succumbed to the massive amount of political pressure to bring charges against Trump. Now, the report didn't talk about Matt Colangelo, so I will. Matt Colangelo was one of the highest-ranking attorneys in Joe Biden's Department of Justice. And what he did is he went down to work for the New York DA to bring this zombie case alive. And this is an election interference. This wasn't approved by the White House? All these cases have been coordinated through the White House. Down in Atlanta, Fannie Willis, she was meeting, and her boyfriend was meeting with the White House to discuss this case. They were meeting with the J6 committee, find ways how to get Donald Trump. So this is all coordinated. And the Dems love to talk about Donald Trump being a threat to democracy. This is a threat to democracy. This is what third world nations do. They go after their opponents through the court system. They criminalize their opponents. And this is what the Biden White House is doing right now, because they know they can't beat him at the polls. So they got to try to kneecap him every chance they can. And they're using the corrupt judicial system, corrupt judges, to get Donald Trump. Now, in a related topic, the Supreme Court this week is hearing the case regarding Donald Trump's immunity. Now, this is emanating from the Washington case against Trump, which is headed by Jack Smith. And Trump's position is, well, wait a second, a lot of things in this indictment are covered with covered by presidential immunity. I shouldn't be indicted for certain presidential acts. And he petitioned the judge, Chutkan, and Chutkan essentially said, no, you've got no immunity here. And he then appealed it to the appeals court, and the appeals court said, no, no immunity here. So Trump's attorneys appealed it to the Supreme Court, and they took it up. And here's the interest, and I want to play a clip here. Justice Alito is talking to one of the government's attorney about immunity. And I find it really startling about the government's position on presidential immunity. They're willing to change everything about precedent, about the Constitution, in order to get Donald Trump. And it has to do with FDR. So during World War II, when Japan attacked us at Pearl Harbor, FDR created these internment camps where Japanese Americans were forced to stay during the war, or at least a good chunk of the war. So Alito asked the government's attorney, well, under your interpretation of presidential immunity, would FDR be prosecuted, or could FDR be prosecuted for interning those Japanese Americans during World War II? Listen to the government's attorney's response.
What about President Franklin D. Roosevelt's decision to intern Japanese Americans during World War II? Couldn't that have been charged under 18 U.S.C. 241, conspiracy against civil rights?
Today, yes.
And this interpretation of presidential immunity by the government just to get Donald Trump is dangerous. These government attorneys want to set a precedent where a president would be hamstrung from making any decision because they would worry about getting prosecuted after they left office. Let's take a look at Obama. Apparently, under this interpretation, Obama could be prosecuted for killing civilians with drones overseas. Could George Bush be prosecuted for misleading the American people about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? But they want this door opened just so they can get Donald Trump. Now, from what I hear, it'll be a 5-4, 6-3 decision in Trump's favor. Presidents have broad immunity within reason. So we'll see what happens. Now, apparently, they're supposed to make a decision by June. I'm hearing rumors that they're just going to extend it further because it really is. This is an extremely important decision that they're making. Because if there's no immunity for presidents regarding the decisions they make as presidents, who would want to be president? Because every president would risk prosecution after they get out of office. So we shall see. So gross domestic product figures came out this week, and it wasn't that good. Everyone predicted that the economy was going to grow at 2.5% for the first quarter of 2024. And the actual number was 1.6%. Not good. And I've often said that the Fed, They're political animals. Now, there's 12 members of the Fed, and they make dramatic decisions that affect your life and my life from an economic standpoint. And they're political animals. And they're going to do everything that they can to get Joe Biden reelected. The Fed has put this country in such a bad spot that whatever decision they make is going to result in stagflation, high interest rates with a slow economy. With that said, I want to go to a clip or two. And it's with a portfolio manager. His name is Michael Pinto. Very wealthy. He'll tell you that he's part of the 1%. But he's not very optimistic on how this economy is going to be good for the middle class. Now, Pinto is being interviewed on a podcast called Thoughtful Money. And if you ever get a chance, watch it. Presents economic issues in a way that the regular person, the non-insider, can relate to. So let's go to this first clip and then we'll come back and discuss.
You know, God has blessed me immensely with a pretty good lifestyle here. So it's not about me. I'm worried about the middle class of this country. Mm-hmm. The government has destroyed, and I use that word in the past tense, destroyed the middle class of the USA. You know, the Fed calls having a fiat currency a tool. Now, I want to ask you, did you ever vote on not backing the US dollar with anything? Did that ever come up for a vote in 1971? Did your dad or your grandpa say, you know what? I think it's a great idea to back the US dollar with absolutely nothing. No.
No, of course not.
It's a rhetorical question. So the Fed has been able to print away every bear market and every recession since 1987. And that has eventually engendered asset bubbles and debt levels that are just, you know, unserviceable and untenable. And when you think about it, there's 12 voting members of the Federal Open Market Committee. 12. Do you think that was by accident? I don't think so. I think they try to imitate that, you know, they're somehow similar to the 12 apostles. And they become like demigods. And they want us to parse Fed statements like we're reading scripture. And let me tell you something, my friend, they're not omniscient. What they really are, in my opinion, is a bunch of feckless politicians. And maybe they're not nefarious in nature, but they're egomaniacs seeking power by any means necessary, holding on to that power.
And then Pinto goes on to predict the future of our economy.
I think the second phase of the recession happens in the summer. I think it's truncated. I don't think it lasts that long, maybe, you know, 6 months, 6 to 9 months. And then you're going to see stagflation like we have never before seen in this country.
And stagflation, if severe enough, can be the equivalent of a depression for the middle class.
But let's get to this future of eye-popping stagflation, right? You've talked, and I agree with you very much so, about how the middle class is really getting decimated. I mean, in real time right now. Obviously, eye-popping stagflation is just going to make that even worse, right? I mean, are we like, I do want to try to end with whatever hope you see in the story here, but like, I mean, are we kind of on a collision course with a banana republic style social strata where you have just a very few people that kind of own it all and everybody else that's basically been pushed out of the ladder to prosperity?
Well, I don't even want to answer your question. I really don't. This is the first time you asked me, but I don't even want to answer. I mean, it's such a sad response that I have. And the United States is resembling more and more of a banana republic. Multiple trillion-dollar deficits, $1 trillion in interest payments, insolvent treasury market. Politically speaking, you know, and here I got a lot of bad emails after I said this, and I am not a supporter. I am not a member of the Republican Party. You know, trying to jail a potential candidate, a leading candidate, and an ex-president. is usurping the desire of the choice of American citizens to vote who they want to put in office. That's what you do in banana republics. Those kind of debt and deficits are what happens in banana republics. And that's where we're, and that's where I think we're headed, unfortunately.
Thank you very much for listening. You have a good week, and I will talk to you next Saturday.